What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Thursdays at 1, we talk to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. 31 Thoughts, which is always a great read every week, and he now joins us. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. It's a beautiful day, and it's going to be 80 degrees here in Nashville. We've had the Blue Angels in the last hour fly over our city, so... No complaints. We had John Hines on a little bit earlier in the show. So, hey, no complaints on our end.
You know, I got to tell you guys, I hate you because our weather has been garbage. So I am really not thrilled with you guys right now. Bringing up that beautiful 80-degree weather. It snowed here on Monday. It should not be snowing in Toronto.
No, it did not. Did it really?
It looks like it's getting better this weekend, but the weather here just sucks. Just sucks.
Now, wait a minute. Was that for effect, or were you being serious? It really snowed on Monday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's
May 11th.
Oh, that's brutal.
2020 just sucks.
I'm sorry, Elliot. That's on me. That's air, Darren. That's on me, because if I'd have known that, I would have not rubbed 80 degrees in your face. I'm sorry.
Well, if I were you, I would have done it more. Like, that's what we're here for. That's what sports radio is. Like, take it and just rub it in.
We just made the announcement in the last 30 minutes that we are basically doing our own documentary here on ESPN 102.5 The Game that we're going to unveil next Friday. It'll be the final 2 hours of our show, so it's going to start at noon Central, and it's called Game 6 Remastered. That will be the three-year anniversary next Friday, May 22nd, of when the Predators defeated the Ducks in Game 6 to punch their ticket into the Stanley Cup Final. And the three of us have been doing a lot of Zoom interviews after the show with players and General Manager David Poile, and just doing interviews about that run and that game and just kind of getting the perspective from a player's point of view. It's been really fascinating. Obviously, we haven't heard what it's going to, you know, the final cut, the 2 hours, how it's going to be put together. We just know our portions of what we've been involved in, and I'm already fascinated by it. I'm sure you've taken on projects like this, and just to get players to kind of go down memory lane with you, what has that experience been like for you?
Well, I really like doing it. I recently did something about the Canucks in 2011, and they had a great team that year. They, you know, they had a great season. They led the league in points. They won the President's Trophy, I think, by 10 points. They led the league in power play percentage. They led the league in goals for. They led the league in goals against. And they were leading in shorthanded percentage until the last week of the season, and they finished tied for second. And they beat their biggest rival, the Blackhawks, in the first round of the playoffs in a crazy seven-game series. And then they went to Game 7 of the Cup Final before they ran out of steam and got beat by Boston. And, you know, I interviewed 30 guys from that organization that were there back then, and we talked about it at length. And the one thing I've always, like, first of all, I'll tell you this, the toughest thing was they were all so excited. And then when we got into the Stanley Cup Final, you know, it's been 9 years, but the pain hasn't gone away, right?
Wow.
And that's what I remember. And I remember is the more interviews I did, I had to be more sensitive about the questions I asked. Because I really find, guys, that when I do those kinds of things, the more engaged you are in terms of remember this detail, remember that detail, and specific details, the more players get into it. And they were getting really excited. And then as I was asking details about that Stanley Cup Final, it hurt. Like, you could tell it hurt. So... I love doing projects like that, but I think they're a lot easier to do when you win, when they lose. And I remember that Western Conference Final. I mean, that was an awesome series. That was the way the hockey is supposed to be played. And it was tough. It was mean. It was intense. You know, there was no room for cowards on the ice in that series, that's for sure.
No doubt about it. And you're right. We get the luxury of stopping at the everything good to that point. We didn't have to go into that final round against Pittsburgh. Maybe the documentary would have changed or the interviews would have changed. But I will say this along those lines. One of the players that I interviewed was Ryan Johansson, and that was this past Tuesday, right after the show, and I did about 40 minutes with him, and he was fantastic. You're going to want to hear Ryan's portion in this kind of documentary, this remastered, next Friday. But I wasn't sure how he was going to react to, because obviously I had to go in depth about, you know, his injury, and he didn't play in game six. He had already been hurt. He'd already been rushed to the hospital and had to go down all that road with him. And I wasn't sure how he would react knowing that he didn't get a chance to play past game four. And you know what? He was so open and so honest and it totally embraced. In fact, I loved his attitude, how he said, I wasn't down at all. That I go, were you, you know, was it tough? Because he came out on the ice on crutches whenever they defeated the Ducks
and
the ceremony. And I said, how tough was that? He said, it wasn't tough at all. And so he really embraced just rooting for it. When he said his teammates came to the hospital, he said, go get them. You know, I'm not down. Go get them. Go do this. Finish this off. And I, because I wasn't sure going into it, but after it was over, I was like, oh, well, that was great and painless. I wasn't sure what to expect.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised. The guy's always been a great interview. I understand totally what you're worried about there, because you're always waiting to ask that first question to see what kind of mood he's really in. But I'm not surprised that, you know, Johansson would say, yes, I'll do it, and then show up and be a great interview about it. You know, that's the best hockey he's ever played.
He admits that, by the way.
Yeah. Ryan Getzlaff, man. Like, Ryan Getzlaff is a beast. And Ryan Kessler is, like, he freely will admit this, like, on the ice, he's a jerk. And, you know, you got to go up against those two guys, and that's not a lot of fun. Like, if you're not ready to take on those two guys, they will eat you alive, and they will abuse you, like, physically. And Johansson, he stood right up to those guys. I remember watching that series in the studio with our guys. And we were sitting there going, oh, my God, like Johansson is taking it to these guys. And, you know, I remember when he got hurt, you know, I got a tip about it. And I was working on it, and I was trying to chase it down. And I found out later that when I texted David Poile to find out if it was true, I think he was on the plane. They were flying either from or to Anaheim. I don't remember. And
yeah, to Anaheim.
We can tell you we were on the plane
yeah.
when the news
broke. We were
on
the plane. We were looking around. We started getting these messages, and we were like, wait a minute. He's not on the plane.
When the door shut,
we're like, we
didn't
want to be too
snoopy. We're looking at each other going, yeah, where's Johansson?
Yeah. And so I think I reported it while you guys were on the plane. And, like, you know your organization. You guys, they're really good to deal with. But I know they weren't thrilled about how it got out when they were on the plane.
Yeah.
We're talking about Elliot Friedman.
In fact, Will, you remember us? Do you remember when Elliot put that out, when all that went out? We were probably halfway. I don't remember where we were in the air at that point, but when it got out, it felt like I was about halfway through the trip. Do you remember everybody going, oh, wow? You know, because we were like, oh, my gosh. Just being able to read the stuff
well,
that was being put out there, because we had no idea.
I had a friend of mine. I don't know if that – I guess the Wi-Fi, you could get emails or texts or something. So we were getting that. I had a friend of mine say the same thing. And so we're looking around going, it must be true because he's not here. But I remember thinking that whole flight too. Do they have enough in the tank? How are they going to win two more games? Right. That's – Elliot, I'm sure you've seen teams rally in that situation any number of times – deep in a playoff run. That's why you got to have those 28, 30, 32 guys who can come in and make plays. It's Pontus Aberg scores the winning goal in Game 5 to get him back to Nashville. We know what Freddie Gaudreau did in the Stanley Cup final. It's just amazing how guys like that emerge and become heroes.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, the one I remember the most was earlier in your time in the NHL in the 2001 Stanley Cup final, New Jersey, Colorado. Peter Forsberg got injured in Game 7 of the Western Conference Final. He had to have his spleen taken out after that series, and he missed the Cup Final. And Colorado won without him. And, I mean, a lot of us were shocked. I mean, we knew they were a great team, but he's such a great player. And it was such a funny series because the whole series, like, people were like, Forsberg's going to show up. Like, he's just going to show up. And Bob Hartley, who was coaching the Avalanche at the time, he would look at us like we were nuts. He goes, he's not playing. Like, what do I have to do to tell you guys he's not playing? And nobody would believe him. Like, we all thought Forsberg was just going to show up out of nowhere. But that was one they won without him. And you're right. Like, in this league, you need two things. You need star power and you need depth, because if you don't have both, you're not going to win.
I'm sure you've been watching this along with all of us, Elliot, The Last Dance. And one thing that we've been bouncing off of various athletes this week and even coaches is the dynamic of Michael Jordan that came across, where he's constantly pushing buttons, ribbing teammates, some even ribbing his general manager at times. And at times we felt like, and I think a lot of people would agree, it's kind of crossed the line. It was a little more mean-spirited. And even though he's trying to justify it, I'm trying to bring you up to my level, I'm trying to make it tougher on you here than it's going to be on the court. You know, we were talking to players, and they really appreciated teammates that could do the good-natured ribbing, even bring you down a peg without crossing that line. Who comes to mind for you as masters of this? Because we all remember the great teammates that way.
You know, I will say this, like, that's what I miss most about my work right now, guys, is that, you know, I can't go into the office and, like, you mentioned the blog before, 31 Thoughts, like, Brian Burke, he calls it 31 Turds. And he'll see me at work and he'll go, hey, Elliot, did you put out 31 Turds today? And I'll just laugh my head off. I think it's really funny. And, you know, I'll be in the makeup chair and David Amber will walk in and he'll be back. He'll walk out and he'll just say, I'll be back in 3 hours. Like, I do miss that. Like, I miss that a lot, actually. But I think there's, like, you know, I think hockey's got a lot of guys, you know, like, there was a guy who played for you guys, you know, unfortunately, it's almost tough to bring up his name, but you had him in Nashville, and that was Wade Bielak. You know, Wade Bielak was a guy that people loved. You know, I remember years ago, I came down to Nashville in 2009 or 10 when Shea Weber was getting named to the Olympic team, and we did a piece on him the day that they were going to name him. And Shea, you know him, like, he hates attention. He just hated the fact we had this camera on him all the time. And the best part of the piece was after Wade Bielak congratulates him, he walks by the camera and he goes, I can't believe I didn't get picked again. And, you know, it was the best part of the piece. And when it happened, people were howling. He was one of those guys. And I really do think that's a key role for guys like that is if you're a guy who doesn't play a lot, you've got to help the team in other ways. And that's about being that kind of a person.
Man, he was a master at it. No question about it. Elliot, let me get your Toronto perspective, because obviously the Maple Leafs aren't the only major league franchise in Toronto. We're all looking for clues on what the hockey league is going to do. But you've got the Raptors there. You've got the Blue Jays there. So what's the perspective on the restarts? Is it all still pretty consistent where you get the sense that they're all talking to each other? I saw Major League Baseball, for example, Tom Verducci reporting that they have their method now of how they're going to try to test the players frequently, which is a big hurdle.
Well, I do think that's the biggest issue in the NHL is testing. I think, as a matter of fact, at this point in time, they're continuing to discuss the playoffs about how it would work, and I think that's something they would really like to try to finalize if they can in the next little while. But there's no question to me the biggest issue is going to be the testing. And, you know, I really think up here it's going to be an issue. And there's three cities here under consideration for hubs, Toronto, Vancouver, and Edmonton. And if you know anything about Canada, if the players get access to testing before, you know, the medical professionals, for example, meet it, or other people who are more vulnerable who meet it, it's going to be a fiasco. And the NHL and the players, they're well aware of that. So I do think that testing is going to be a huge issue. You know, our organization here that I work for, Rogers, we own the Blue Jays, and we own 37.5% of the Leafs and the Raptors. And nobody from our place will tell me this, but just from talking to each other, the guys who work here, we all think the NBA, the Major League Baseball is going to be back first. I'd be surprised if the NHL was playing before late July or August, the way it's going right now. But we all think that baseball is coming back first, and a lot of what they do is kind of going to set the template of what we're going to do. Like, if, I don't know if you've seen those videos from South Korea of the players getting tested on the way in. You know, I've had people tell me that that's the way it's going to look in the NHL too.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. And Elliot, we talked to John Hines, Predators head coach, earlier today about a variety of different things. And one of the things that really stood out to me is you see the success that he's had in a short amount of time. The team is in a playoff spot. If they come back, I mean, they're in that wild card spot, one of the wild card spots right now, which is impressive knowing that he took over midseason. He had been fired from one job. His family wasn't here, having to deal with everything that a head coach does. But with the momentum that the Predators had, I also hear the excitement in his voice that if they get back, he feels like they could have something to say about it all. How beneficial has this time off been to somebody like John Hines that has been able to take a step back and actually evaluate the team that he has?
Well, I think it helps. Like, I really do believe that every coach out there is looking at is saying that I can do one. I can let this be a negative that we're not playing, or I can find a way to turn into a positive. And if you're not trying to find a way to turn into a positive, you shouldn't be a coach in the NHL. It's that simple. And you know, I guarantee that he's reached out. He's probably not driving his players crazy, but he's just, you know, touching in. What are you up to? Are you finding some way to keep healthy? I mean, the guys who are in Sweden, if any of your guys went back, they can skate. So I'm sure that they've been doing it. You know, I think you're looking for every edge, right? I think the biggest thing is that, you know, more players are going to be healthy. Normally when you start the playoffs, you're far from 100%. You're dinged up, if not beaten up, and then you really get beaten up. That's not going to be the case. I think the challenge, though, is a lot of these guys are going to be out of hockey shape. They might be in shape, but they're going to be out of hockey shape. And how do you kind of fix that when you get back? But I think that a lot of these coaches, John Hines and his peers, they see this as a challenge. Like, my challenge is to make sure that I can prepare my team when they get back to play. And I'm not in the least bit surprised that he would look at it that way. It's the only way to look at it.
I know it's hard to answer this question, too, because this is all unprecedented, but, you know, there are times where you have a player that just simply has a down year. It's just, for whatever reason, you can't explain it. The puck doesn't go in the net. They're just not playing well. Ryan Johansson is one of those guys that you brought up earlier that this has not been a Ryan Johansson-like year. He'll be the first to admit that. He did an interview with The Athletic with Joe Rexroad here in town. And he said that, and he said it's bothered him. I brought that up with John Hines. John Hines said they've had a conversation about it. He loves that he's owned it. And my question is, can this maybe be viewed as this is the off season now? So essentially, if they do come back, whether they're finishing the regular season or going straight into the playoffs, a player like Johansson that hasn't had that great of a year, you could see him turn it around because he's had that time to reevaluate and figure out what was going wrong and shake out the cobwebs or whatever the case may be. That's kind of how I've looked at some things.
Well, I agree with that. And the one thing that I've always believed, guys, is that no matter what happens to you in the regular season, the playoffs gives you an opportunity to write a different narrative. You could have a regular season where you come in 50 points below what you should get or not play well, And if you have a great playoff, it doesn't matter. And, you know, I think that, again, as you guys have talked about, this is a unique situation, but I really think you get a chance to rewrite what is said about you. I mean, as you guys know, Predators were starting to go before this pandemic hit and the season was paused. And, you know, you probably feel this is a team that probably went away feeling a lot better about itself than it did at any other point in the year. So you get to come back with that feeling. That's the last thing in your mind. You're excited about playing because you finished up strong. And those guys who didn't play well, you know, I'm sure David Poile and John Hines are telling them it doesn't matter. It's a fresh start now. And I guarantee you that if you're any kind of a player, that's the way you're going to think of it too. If those guys go on and they light up in the postseason and you guys do well, I think anyone's going to remember that Ryan Johansson or anyone else started with struggled over the first 65 games. Not a chance. You get a chance to rewrite your history.
Elliot, how's your 8-year-old doing through all this?
My what? Pardon me, sorry?
Your 8-year-old. How's your 8-year-old, Dylan? We're 2+ Max, months in.
Yeah, Max is doing pretty well. Like, he's, you put it this way, his school's been good. They give 3 or 4 Zoom classes a day, but he loves being at home rather than being in school. he's been a real champ. We've been very fortunate about that. You know, we need the weather to get better so we can take him outside. We just bought a basketball hoop. We got to do some cycling, some biking out there. We got to get his dad off the couch. Like, that kind of stuff has to happen right now. But he's been excellent. Thank you for asking.
Nice.
How have all your family's been?
Oh, that's interesting because, you know, I've told you I have an 8-year-old son too, and they're not doing any Zoom classes related to school, which is interesting. So he does that daily?
Yes, and, you know, my son is in a private school.
Okay.
So, you know, like, and I give them credit. They've been, so they send 3 or 4 Zoom classes a day, the links of them. And I will tell you, like, some of them, they're young kids, so some of them can be a bit Lord of the Flies, but he's generally been pretty good, and I've been pretty proud of him.
Good stuff. Hey, always good to talk to you. You and the family continue to be safe. I won't tell you that it's going to be 84 tomorrow here in Nashville.
Oh,
have a great weekend.
You guys too. Have a great weekend. Chat next week.
See Elliot.
All right, Elliot. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet and 31 Thoughts. It snowed there on Monday. Are you kidding me? In Toronto, get out of here with that. Holy
it reminds
cow.
Me of it reminds me of one of thousands of great Terry Crisp stories. He flew back to Calgary for a Flames alumni golf tournament, Memorial Day weekend, and all, you know, a lot of the players from his 89 Cup team and all this, a lot of great moments, and we're going to be relived, and all these great Flames alumni were coming back, and it got snowed out. Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend. Oh, that's so gross. By the way, they're supposed to be opening up the pools then.
Exactly.
All right.
Is that going to happen?
Good. I don't know. I saw last night where I guess state park pools are not going to open for the summer. I don't even know what state park pools are. I'm not sure I even understood that. But I saw that last night on the news that they're not opening. They're not going to open up this summer. So I'm not familiar with state park pools. But nonetheless, I did see that. But that's a good question. I don't know.
I would imagine home pool sales are going
up. Oh, boy, you're right. Maybe a good time to be in the pool industry. You're right. Yep. Good point. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. A lot of you are working from home. We know that. You can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That's certainly a good option. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can always just live stream it from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. We've had some fantastic interviews today on this Thursday edition of Darren Donick and Chase. Tim Corbin in the first hour, Vanderbilt baseball coach. John Hines, Predators head coach. In the second hour, Paul Feinbaum. In the third hour, we had him on at noon. And you just heard Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, who's on every Thursday at 1 o'clock. And we made the announcement at 12:30 with Ryan Porth, our program director, about what we are going to unveil next Friday starting at noon. So it'll be in the final 2 hours of our show where ESPN 102.5 The Game is going to celebrate the Predators' win in the Western Conference Final against the Ducks. It'll be the three-year anniversary next Friday, which is going to be May 22nd, that epic Game 6 win at Bridgestone Arena. And you're going to hear a lot of stuff, basically our version of our documentary of Game 6. And so that is going to be Game 6 Remastered is what it's going to be called, and that'll be next Friday starting at noon. So that is going to be fantastic. Did you guys see where Mookie Betts showed up at a local Kroger and helped some folks out?
I did. I did see that.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I saw. I actually got tagged in a post on Facebook that I think Fox 17 had put out. It was Stacey Case that it was him. And he had his mask on. Like, do you know who this sports guy is? And so somebody tagged me of, hey, dude, who is that? And I was like, it's Mookie. It's Mookie Betts. But very, very cool.
Yeah, so he went to the Kroger in Bordeaux, and he picked up the tab. And for a lot of the customers there, I wonder how many that was. And he also surprised the staff with pizza to thank for their work. Really good stuff, but I'm not surprised, right? He's known for sort of the secret random act, you know, not really letting anybody know he's going to do it. Remember that story about he took a bunch of food from the post-game spread after the World Series and took it to some homeless people in Boston, and somebody actually found a way to document it, even though he didn't intend for it to go that way. So random act of kindness, that's a Mookie Betts trait.
No doubt about it. So good work by Mookie here in our community. I was just looking at our friend Jimmy Shapiro, who we should have on from betonline.ag, and there are last dance prop bets out there for the final two episodes on Sunday night.
Speaking of Mookie and last dance, did you see the little piece he did?
Yes.
Coming out of a commercial?
Yeah, he was in there.
Uh-huh.
That was cool.
Yes, I did see that. That was cool. They've got kind of a prop bet on will it set a record for, you know, viewership over under at 6 million. I think what has it been, about 5.5 million? Has that been the tops that they've had for these episodes? So I guess they're saying for the final two, is it going to set a record? So they're putting 6 million over or under. First person shown. Phil Jackson is the favorite, followed by Jerry Krause, then Scottie Pippen, then Reinsdorf, and then Rodman. See how many people will be shown with a cigar in their mouth over under three different people. How about this one?
So if you're going to bet your own money on that when it's known, right? This has been like. Wouldn't you be better off trying to find somebody who's had access to seeing this? I always wonder about prop bets like that, where the finished product is in a vault somewhere, right? Somebody has access to it. Like, don't you think information could seep out, like even to Jimmy?
Well, if you've noticed, some of the people in the documentary.
Does Jimmy know the answer to that question right now?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. It's a good question. I would say no. They do not.
It's like with some of the Super Bowl prop bets, right? Of, you know, what color is the Gatorade going to be? There would be a way you could find that out.
I mean, that's a good point. I wonder if
they're pretty good about sniffing that stuff out. Just so you know, and a lot of these prop bets they cap them.
There's a limit.
There's a limit just because of insider trading, air quotes.
Yes.
Insider information.
But like I was looking last week with UFC, and you know there are props of okay, will so and so win by a knockout? Will it be a decision? Will it be a unanimous decision? Will it be a submission? Will it happen in the third round? Will it happen in the? I mean, there are different types of props, and
yeah, but that stuff you can't figure out. But what he's talking about stuff like that there is somebody who has an answer.
Stuff is already known.
People know. That stuff is, you know, Nobody knows how a UFC fight is going to play out. But we're talking about stuff where there are prop bets that people could people do know the answer to. Very, very select few.
Yeah, but, like, but there are people who know the answer. Let's take one we used to have fun with, right? We've talked about it in light of Game 6 Remastered. Part of the fun was guess who's singing the anthem. And there were people that could figure it out.
Sure.
Right? There were people that knew the information. So, I mean, I wonder if Jimmy had a prop bet on there at any point in Vegas. Who's singing the anthem? In
well, the length
tonight?
Of the
I mean,
anthem.
That would.
This just in, they do rehearse. And so they know how long it takes to sing the anthem
in rehearsal.
That's a common
one. That's a common one, for sure. Because there is a little bit of unknown, right? If you carry a note a little bit longer or whatever, that could change it by a second or so. That's a little different than who's coming in there. But this is the equivalent of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite prop on this is...
How many cigars?
Yeah, well, this is my favorite. Will Michael Jordan be shown in a Wizards uniform? Yes or no? Like, who cares?
I've heard you got to mention that, though, right?
I guess. I heard Trey Wingo bring it up the other day of, you know, and I think he was halfway joking, but of are they going to mention that?
Well, they've got it in a prop bet, so it can't be too crazy.
Yeah.
No is the favorite, though.
-200, yeah.
My favorite one is how many times will there be an F-bomb said? 2.5 is the over.
I would take the over.
That's good.
I would take the over, too. Yes.
That's low. In my opinion. 2.5.
Me too. I thought that was low. And the other one that jumped out to me was Michael Jordan. Will Michael Jordan cry while being interviewed? The favorite is no, but it's a slight favorite. Slight.
Do you guys remember, he played two for the Wizards. All right, so this would be my argument that it should be discussed. Do you remember how many points he scored on average?
For the Wizards?
Like you're thinking, the Wizards, whatever. Yeah.
I don't know his average.
I don't.
I know he had.
What would you guess?
22 points.
Yeah. I was going to say 20, somewhere around there. What was it, Willie? You broke up.
22.9 and then 20.
Huh. Those were the – really? Oh, we nailed it.
Good job. Yeah. I know. Wow. I did see a graphic the other day that he had had over 50 in three different decades, and one of those was with the Wizards. When he came back with the Wizards, because that was obviously the 2000s, he had like a 59-point game. And I don't know if that was his first year or what, but I thought that was kind of interesting that he had over 50 in three different decades.
It's not like it was a total waste of time. Like, he came back, he was legit. Still pretty good, and he had taken three seasons off, and he still got the them to the playoffs. They finished. Oh no! Not, well, let me see. Fifth in the NBA's Atlantic Division.
I thought they did make.
They
the
went
playoffs.
37-45 in each year.
Yeah, and who was his coach?
Doug Collins.
Doug Collins. That's right. I was blanking.
So I think that I would be interested. If I'm watching the documentary, I would be interested in seeing that. Touching on it a little bit, you know?
I mean, and they probably will. And I would think that they would at the end, now that I really think about it. I mean, it is a part of the story. And the whole narrative that they've been weaving throughout this thing is, if Phil's not back, I'm not back. I'm not going to play for anyone other than Phil. And 3 years later, he comes back and plays for somebody other than Phil.
Do you guys like the going back and forth on the calendar?
Yes. I think they do a good job weaving that in.
Yes. I think it's good.
I think it's a little
confusing.
It does
get a little confusing. I'll be honest. With my
For me. A little time. And that maybe you just say, well,
Erin,
you're not.
My wife, Erin, she gets confused. I have to remind her where we are in the timeline sometimes.
That's where I'm going
as
with
two
this.
Two times get closer together.
If you're just watching it and you're more on the casual side, you know, you're just a novice of Michael Jordan, I think it's a little confusing, quite honestly. That's been my thoughts through this. I'm like, you know, if you're not well in tune to, you know, the whole time, like Michael Jordan's career, and you know it, that's one thing. You're not confused. But there's a lot of people just checking out because it's Air Jordan. It's Michael Jordan. You know, he's very, very famous, and they don't know everything about it. I thought it was, to me, it could be a little bit confusing, I would think, for some. In fact, I have found it at times a little bit confusing. So, I just wondered if anybody
I have
else
not,
thought.
But I can see how people would. By the way, just for the record, the Wizards did not make the playoffs in either of those years that Michael Jordan played, even though they were horrendous before he got there. Two respectable seasons, 37 and 45, although just missed the playoffs.
And he was he 40 yet? Or was he like 39? I don't remember.
Michael Jordan was age 38 and 39.
Okay.
After sitting out for three straight seasons. His last year, the one we're watching right now, was 97-98. He was 34 that year. So three entire seasons off, came back and played for two at age 38 and 39, and averaged 22.9 and then 20.0.
There you go. MJ with the Wizards.
There you
That's
go.
That's the next documentary.
There has been a medical task force that the
30
SEC...
for 30 short.
Did you guys see where there's been 14 doctors named, one from representing each school in the SEC, to put together a medical task force to help guide the conference using these professionals and their information to, you know, for a return for athletic activities, including team gatherings, practices, conditioning, and competition, which I think is a great idea. I really do.
I have not seen that. Do tell.
I haven't seen it either. But yeah,
well, it's
awesome.
it's just a, you know, like I said, a doctor from, you know, Vanderbilt has got their representative, Dr. Warren Fitch, who is an associate professor of emergency medicine, associate professor of orthopedics at Vanderbilt University. You know, and each university has a doctor, and that they have served up, and they will be a part of a task force to help Greg Sankey and the conference, you know, do the right thing and trying to figure out what's the best way. Because I just told you, I threw that out there right as we were bringing Paul Feinbaum on, that they are expected to make a decision. I think I read June 1st or June 5th, either the very 1st of June or the middle of June, they will have a decision made. I think that's what I read this morning. So obviously this group is going to help them with that process.
Well, there you
because
go.
Time,
very cool.
Time is ticking, just like we've been talking about. I mean, these leagues are going to indeed have to come up with a decision here very soon. Flipping through the channels, Mike Vrabel on Rich Eisen's show.
Yep, I have right that now. On, actually.
We will come back and put a bow on Thursday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Got a uniform drawing contest for a chance to win a jersey from either the Preds, Nashville SC, Sounds, Vanderbilt football, or MTSU basketball. You can download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com, or you can draw your own and submit for your chance to win. Game listeners will then vote on the top three uniforms from each category, hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, and the winner will get a jersey from that sport. You can enter today at thegamenashville.com. Florida AD putting some stuff out there. Did you guys see that?
I did. I was actually just looking at that during the break. Don't know who Blake is. That the University of Florida is apparently open to hosting events involving professional sports. Teams, you know, Scott Strickland putting that out there, that they could possibly do that if there are some teams that, you know, can't play in their normal market. So I find that interesting that you have a university that's like, yeah, we're open. Here, come help you, or we'll help you out. Come play here.
Well, I think it's echoing the governor down there who – he definitely is bring it on. You know, I saw he was like, we'll take anything. Yeah, I saw, you know, a soundbite of his saying, you know, and I think we had talked about this earlier as a possibility, the MLS, which would include Nashville, right? They have had some talks about just playing the entire league in Orlando. And I think the governor mentioned something like that yesterday. So they're open to anything and everything. And so hopefully they're going to take the right measures to minimize risk, keep people safe as possible. But, you know, they're going proactive. Same thing with Arizona yesterday, right, as a state, saying if you want to play here, you can play here.
Isn't it amazing all of a sudden these governors coming out and like, hey, we're open for business, sports league, sports team, sports tournaments, we're open.
Yeah, even with no fans, right? Like, so it's interesting. Like, what's the motivation? I'm, where does the state gain? I guess the optics of it's going on there. I don't know all the financial motivation there.
Well, this is how I take it. Is the University of Florida opening their campus to a pro sport out of the kindness of their heart, or for a fee, you can use our football field or our gymnasium, our arena? You know, you got to pay us to do that.
That's a good question. I don't know. And also, I thought you were going to say this, Chase, and this might be a motivation, would be, okay, let's observe how they go about their business, and we'll be taking notes. So when it's our time for our school to maybe try this, we'll have some things to go off of.
That's a good point too. I mean, that could very well be a part of it, but I believe that there's a financial part of this as well that they want to see. And if that's the case, I can't really say that it's a terrible idea. I mean, but then you have optics you have to deal with. So if the University of Florida opens for a pro team in another state that they can't use their facilities, so they come down there, and then, but it's ruled that, you know, they're not going to play, the Gators can't play. I mean, there's optics involved there, because then you're going to have some people go, well, it's fine for the pro team. Why isn't it fine for our kids on the campus or the kids to play? So there's a lot of different things involved that could be misconstrued in my mind.
That could get a little sticky, I would think. You know, it's because you have to draw a distinction between a pro franchise and a college franchise, at least you would think. In some people's mind, maybe you don't make that distinction, especially if you're seeing it being played in a college facility. So that could be interesting.
Gregory on Twitter says, could you imagine, we kind of ended the show with this yesterday when I asked you guys, and we kind of went into some great detail of some documentaries that you would like to see done, a 30 for 30. And he said, can you imagine one on Bud Adams?
Oh,
forming the AFL, his time in Houston, the move to Tennessee. It could be interesting.
I would watch that.
You know, he at his best, Bud Adams could tell some great stories. And, of course, our friend John McClain was very good at bringing out the stories, and he himself told great stories, although John didn't go all the way back to the beginning, but he had done his research and history of the origin of the Houston franchise. It's some really interesting stuff. The beginning of the AFL, the American Football League, not the Arena Football League, there's some wild, wacky things that went on, and Bud Adams was right in the middle of a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to sign players, right, or trying to steal them away from the NFL and being the rebel upstart league, you know, promoting the forward pass and all the innovations in the game. They deserve a lot of credit, I think, for pushing the game along.
I think you would have to have one John McClain involved in that documentary.
No doubt.
To tell a
no
lot of stories.
Doubt. Front and center.
Lots of stories.
Have to have Floyd involved.
Floyd,
in that.
John McClain. There would have to be some good storytelling from there. Wow. Yeah.
Jerry
and maybe
have good, you could
maybe
have a good segment
on the I was getting ready to say, the little scuffle on
the
sidelines. That's
got to
be
Buddy
in there.
Ryan, the Buddy Ryan punch with Kevin Gilbride. Oh,
I mean,
my
that's
gosh.
That's got to be in there, right?
Well, the NFL Network, I think, did a is it a Football Life? They did one of those hour-long shows on the 93 Oilers because some wacky things happened, sad, happy, and all in between during that, and that was one of them.
They started
1-4 and then ripped off 10 straight wins or whatever it was to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs and then lost to Joe Montana and the Chiefs.
That was B-Hop's rookie year, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was his rookie year.
And Munchak's last year, I think, as a player.
That sounds right.
That does sound right, yep.
It'd be all a good 30 for 30. I'd watch.
Me too. I would, too.
I'm going outside, sure. Fellas. That's what I'm doing.
It is in the eight, and it's 80 degrees. Yeah. Walk the dogs. Go take a walk. Go enjoy the sunshine. That is going to do it for our show today. Appreciate all the great guests and stories that we got on today's program. Be safe. Enjoy the day. We want you back with us to close out the week tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.